very, very quick review of what we did the last time. If you were not here, I mentioned that you could do the read the program notes, which will get you caught up a bit. And I'll also talk about sort of the various main musical ideas we've had, because they all come back. We're going to hear them all again today in the end of the piece. So first of all, you have the main thing, which is the tritone. It's the thing that stabilizes pitch. It was considered the interval of the devil in the Middle Ages. That sound. So it destroys the feeling of a key center, of having a home place. And it can be resolved. It can be resolved by coming down. And if you add the A, you get this kind of sound from here to. All right? Or it can resolve up from here to here. And that happens once. So it gets resolved down three times, the end of the first movement, the second, and the ending. So we've heard the first two resolutions, and today you'll hear it happen essentially the same way as it does. So that comes back. Yes, and another thing you can do with the tritone is come down that way. It's not quite as resolved, but he uses this interval a lot. So you do hear that sound as well, going down to the fourth. Okay, secondly, he uses a lot of asymmetrical motifs, rhythmic motifs. Well, all that means is that instead of the normal 2-3-4 subdivision, 1-2-1-2, 1-2-3, which feels very normal, or 1-2-3-4, he does 5. Sometimes in a measure of 5. 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5-1. Feels like something is missing. Or 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5. It's like you've got something extra. So you're limping along, or you have to drag that. Your foot takes a little longer for you to get there. In other words, it destabilizes a normal rhythm. Right? Or it can do it within a beat. 1-2-3-4-5, 1-2-3-4-5, 1-2. We're used to subdividing 2, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and, or 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Feels very normal to us, right? But if you do a quintuplet, that's 5, you get 1-2-3-4-5, 1-2-3-4-5, 1-2. Feels like it's got an extra pulse in there, dividing the beat. So again, that destabilizes the rhythm. All right, we have the boys' theme, which we found out sounds fairly normal, but actually contains the tritone at the beginning and the end. And it gets, as the boys sing this tune, they sing fewer and fewer notes, and all of a sudden all you're left is the beginning and the ending notes, which are the F sharp and the C. And that's actually where we're going to start today, with the similar thing that happens with the soprano at the beginning of the Sanctus movement. We'll come back to that and talk about it. So that's why I bring it up again today, because Britten uses it again, that kind of an idea, where the theme gets shorter and shorter and you become more and more aware of this tritone within it. Okay? Then, so all these things happen in the first section of the piece. The second section introduces the four main music ideas in addition to the tritone. So you have a trumpet or bugle call to judgment or battle, and we're going to hear that come back at the climax. Ba-bum-bum. So it can be final judgment for eternity, or it can be the call to battle by the bugle player. Let's go into the final battle. You have the horn call, bum-bum-ba-bum-bum, with that kind of a sound. Call to the hunt. Are you hunting fox? Game, or are you hunting your fellow human being? It means, in this case, you're called to hunt and shoot down your fellow human being. The scales, we have scales going down into despair and darkness and hell. Bum, 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 bum. And it keeps going down. And it's not a normal scale. It's not one that fits major or minor or fits the old medieval modes. It's its own combination of whole steps and half steps, which again keeps you from feeling that it's too tonal, right? Or that it would be too normal or too stable. You have an unstable melodic line. So it can go down. Sometimes it goes up for hope or up for lifting up the big artillery gun for ready for the gun to curse, as it says in the poetry. All right, so it scales up and down. The Dies Irae theme is the setting of the medieval, what's called sequence or tract, I guess. And that's a, well, if I just say Dies Irae, Dies Ila, solvet saeclum infa vila, and there's a Gregorian tune that goes with it. Britain does not use a Gregorian tune. Some people ask me about that. It's not the Gregorian. But that Gregorian tune is used in things like the Berlioz Symphony Fantastique. So it does appear in music and used by other composers. However,
how does the Gregorian melody go?
Okay, thanks. Yeah. So it's very medieval. He takes his own theme, and it's D, Es, I, Re, D, Es, I, La, Sol, Vet, Se, Clum, In, Fa, Vi, La. So what has he done? He's added, it's actually a septuplet. There's seven, but it's got that off balance, it's got that extra pulse in there, you know, instead of going on in a square way. So we're going to hear that come back again in a lot of ways. Okay, now here are a few other side things we talked about. One is that he makes some reference to 12-tone serialism, which means you use all the notes in the chromatic scale. That is, every note, instead of just like going up a scale, you put in all of the black keys in between, say if you're in a key of C. You play everything right up, if you can do that yourself on the piano. Just play all, and it gives you a chromatic scale. And he uses it more that way, but he does, the idea of serialism is to use all the notes before you repeat another one and come back to it. But it has other things. You can turn it upside down, you can go backwards to forwards, you can do upside down, backwards to forwards, you can do several at the same time. It's a very constricted, controlled kind of writing, but it also can get a lot of variety by doing all these very intellectual things with it. Okay, but he doesn't use it a lot, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it. It's just, it's there. He knows about it. He just chooses not to use it in a very rigorous way. He uses it in an expressive way, see, which means you let loose a little bit so that it says something in the music emotionally or about the text. He has this one spot that we listen to that we call the canon, where one part picks up with another part. It's like singing around. Except it's very long, and it's hard to sort of remember what the whole melody was, and then it comes on. That was in the middle of the Dies Irae. Again, we're not going to hear much of that today, so I'm not going to spend time talking about that a lot. We have war sounds that keep coming back and using the various percussion instruments, using the high piccolo, so it's like the bullets flying through the air. Makes kind of screaming sounds with that, battle kinds of sounds. And then I keep giving you the end of the story, which I probably shouldn't, but we'll see again today where after all of this tritone stuff which comes through, all the movements, permeates the chords, permeates the melodies, is all over the place. Finally get rid of it at the end because you do it in a pentatonic scale, which is like all the black keys on the piano. You cannot have a tritone. You cannot do it if those are the only notes you're using. So it comes and feels very resolved, and it's got rid of the tritone. Now we'll see the tritone comes back in once more when the boys sing it, in the signal that we've sort of infected the next generation. All right? Because they... generally, before that, they've sung sort of positive, hopeful texts for the most part. The other thing about the pentatonic scale is there's a kind of universality about it, because that scale tends to be in almost all cultures, right? Even it's not like the Westerners went, say, to the East, or the Chinese came and gave to Marco Polo. It's not that kind of thing. It was sort of in back in the ancient music, for most cultures have a pentatonic scale, and some it's the main scale, instead of major and minor, for instance, that the main scale is pentatonic. I think in China, for instance, it would be pentatonic is one of the major roots of melodies. Okay? Do you have any questions about that? That sort of gets us caught up in terms of what Britain is doing musically. All right. Now let me get my head back on because I was going to do all talk and I can go back and do what I was going to do originally, which is to pick it up at the beginning of the Sanctus. All right, by reminder, what has just happened in our listening from last time is we had the terrible poem of Abraham and Isaac. Okay, do you see where that happens? And the title of the poem is actually The Old Man and the Young. And we find that Isaac has been slain by his father and half the seed of Europe one by one. Right? And then we found out that all the music about the promise to Abraham that had come before that gets turned upside down. So it's loud is soft, what's high is low, what was sopranos is basses, what's a crescendo is a decrescendo. Everything is turned upside down by what Abraham has done, but what we have done, of course. All right, and we've just had that, and the movement just sort of disintegrates. It just goes down to the bottom of the orchestra, and just, it's like, okay, we don't know how to end it. So that's where we're at this point in the listening. Now let's see, now I've got to time myself so we get it all in. Yep, we're all right. So the song just starts, lo and behold, we get our good friends, actually our bad friends back. And that is the bells and other percussion give us. Well, that's the F sharp again. There it is. And the soprano sings, starting at the F sharp. No, she starts its note below and goes to it. And then she starts above it. Right, and then you get the F sharp sounding again, F sharp, being the Sanctus is. And arrives back at the F sharp. So what has she had? She's had the bugle call. And so at descending, he's taken the descending scale and he's taken the major triad from the bugle call to that, and in addition, it's 12th tone. So he's taken all those things and crunched them together and made a new melody. It sounds essentially new. And it's, as soon as that's done, then you get this note. Well, there we are. It's the F sharp back to the C. The tritone that we talked about. And then she sings a shorter melody based on that. And so on. And it goes back and does the F sharp again. So it's behind this very exuberant Sanctus. Holy, holy, holy. And she ends, she has some quite high notes. This is followed by Heaven and Earth are full of thy glory, Pleni sunt caeli et gloria tua. And here he uses a little bit of another 20th century technique in Western music, chance music. So he's got this little bit of chance stuff in the choir. And all you see on the page are, it's got Pleni sunt caeli et terra gloria to it, just all written out under a single note. So everybody's supposed to do it at his or her own pleasure in terms of how many words to get in. So you don't sing with your neighbor. And what you get is this sort of coming together of all of humanity saying heaven and earth is full of thy glory. It sounds like people speaking in tongues almost. And he builds it up to a big chord. All that murmuring and murmuring, which becomes more and more distinct and clearer and clearer, and you end up on a big chord. That kind of chord, and all of a sudden, out of it comes the brass. So very great in what he's using, the bugle or trumpet call, fills it in, and you get just a plain old triad, right? Comes out from all over in the choir and in the orchestra, not at the same time. So he keeps this kind of like things are coming from all over the place, from different people, by having, well, the trumpets will do it, and the horns will do it, sopranos will do it, and so on. It's a little bit of hard writing for the choir, because the more you split a choir up, the softer it gets, and you're singing against the brass. In a sense, it's very bad choral writing. But you have to make it work, because, of course, it's a great musical effect. It's like singing Beethoven. You know, the Ninth Symphony is a terrible piece. It's an awful piece for the choir and the Missa Solemnis, but it gets done all the time because of its message and how effective it is as a piece of music. Well, here's the spot in this piece that is almost impossible to pull off because it's so high and it's against all that brass sound. Okay, just a little sidelight. Let you know I've been there and tried to do this. You know how I solved it? I did the same thing that Britten did to the poetry, you know, where he made some changes to make it work. I would put altos with the sopranos because they're never at exactly the same time. And I put some other altos with the tenors, who are never at the same time, and some baritones up with the bottom of the tenor voices. So that there are always like a third more people singing than what you would get if you did it strictly by what was in there. And it doesn't ruin the effect at all, unless you're in a place where you can hear each part. But there's so much going on in the brass and orchestra that you don't hear stereo effects at all anyway. So it works. Yes? Yes. All right, so you get all of this, and you need to kind of remember about how long it is, because after that comes a lovely Benedictus. Yeah, just a rather normal melody, and he does a lot of what we call parallel fifths, so you've got the outer notes of the bugle theme, and he sort of harmonizes within the choir with these open sounds up and down. But otherwise it sounds fairly normal, and I think your feeling is, you know, this is a, you know, thank goodness, here is a lovely spot that we don't have to deal with and struggle with anymore. All right, so blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Maybe again it's a more hopeful, more placid section, which you need. I mean, you can suffer only so much during one concert performance. Okay, then the Hosanna comes back in. And it's got, as the first time, it has a bass kind of what we call ostinato, where you get the same figure coming in, except he keeps throwing it off rhythmically. Keeps getting stumbling along, and above it you get the Hosanna, and he builds it up faster than the first time around, and you get in excelsis, and it's cut off. It gets cut off too soon, and instead of finishing it off normally, you get after the blast of lightning from the east, the Wilfred Owen poem. So you've had all this glorious music, this kind of music that feels it has some resolution to it, and instead you get, you know, shall things get better, and an old age says no. So no hope at all. So all this tremendous amount of hope, and then nothing, and you get thrown down. And it's got little bits of the various war kind of sound themes, and some of the ones that we've been talking about. You'll hear a trumpet or something play that one, and you hear something that sounds like Confutatis that we heard yesterday. Confutatis maledictis, but much slower, and in the bottom. All right, and you get a little bit of kind of a sick sound, and you'll hear that, the way he's got it orchestrated. And it ends, guess where? Down in the bassoon plays this, and then the double bass plays. So it ends way down on the tritone. It's as low as you ever get it in a piece. That's how low that you're feeling by this point. You're right down at the bottom. Okay? So that's the Sanctus. And if you'd like to contemplate that a little bit, I'll actually get a recording out and start playing. Thank you. humanity. Hosanna back like it's supposed to.
Oh,
So it doesn't leave you in a very good place. It's down, down, very, very low. If we have time at the end, I can tell you a funny story about Vishnuskaya, but this is not the appropriate time, because you'll listen to her differently if I tell you. For the Anyushtey next, it's really, won't take a lot of explanation, but just a couple things will help you hear a little bit more than you might have. One is, the tritone is there again, and it comes one note every measure. So at the beginning, in the orchestra, the chamber orchestra, you have this. And I could go on, that's only a little portion of it. This is called an ostinato, where you have a repeated thing, and often composers will do it in the bottom part and then have a melody on top. It's a big thing for composers to be able to do an aria or some piece based on an ostinato in the bass part. Big deal, you're a good composer if you can do that. He's done it here not to show off, but it's kind of, again, trudging along in five. So you know, it's five notes. One, two, three, four. Along. Jesus, too, as you read in the poem, has lost a limb. So again, it's got this kind of a limp to it, so it makes sense. And it keeps going as the soldier, whoever, goes down the path and sees this, and the rest of thinks about what's going on. And as the he sees the priest and whoever, a scribe, come trudging by. So you have this going on. Well, the first note in each measure is one of the tritone notes. So it starts F sharp, and then you have C natural, and F sharp, right? Okay, so you get this going on constantly. The tenor sings, he starts on F sharp also. tone scale, all major seconds. And you get all kinds of tritones in that. You get tritones everywhere. Instead of like pentatonic where you can't make one, this one implies tritones all over the place. So it makes it hard to sing. It's when you, why you do an audition for a choir and you give them a whole tone scale to sing. Because it takes a pretty good, it would be fun to try it here, to see if you can all sing a whole tone scale. And then you can make the St. Olaf Choir or not make the St. Olaf Choir. Anyway, so you've got the whole tone scale going on in the tenor part, and you've got the ostinato being there. And the other important thing that happens is that you get to the end, and it goes along, and he finally, in the choir, sempiternam, it goes to an F sharp chord. It's the one place where the tritone is resolved up. And then the tenor gets to sing a beautiful melody, ascending up through that, giving hope, dona nobis pacem, grant us peace. So listen to how that ending sounds after you've been trudging along in this tritone-laden piece.
Can I say something about the poem?
Oh,
strikes me that in the poem, Jesus is the guy by the side of the road. There's no good Samaritan to come help him.
Right.
The scribe and the priest are the ones who pass by.
Right.
But there's no rescuer. There's no good Samaritan to come help.
No, it's just, you know, except the ending says what should happen, right?
They who love the greater love lay down their life they do not hate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the beast? What is flesh marked?
I wonder about that too.
Yeah, I wonder about that too.
A revelation image. Yeah. Those who are marked.
Yeah. Marked by the beast?
The Antichrist.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, going on. Now we're at the last movement. And we've been through a lot already, and you're going to get to Judgment Day now, or to the final battle, whichever way you want to look at it. It's kind of a march in four, except the subdivision now of five is within the beat. Again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1. It's going to happen all over the place. And what you're going to hear is a gradual build-up in the way he orchestrates and brings in the voices and so on. You don't have to know any of the details I'm going to tell you, but this is, it's a great study in how you build up a climax in a piece of music. So over about the next 6-7 minutes, the piece, it's a gradual crescendo from soft to loud. It increases in range, goes up and gets higher and higher. The intervals get bigger and bigger, so at first he starts and it's just seconds. The next door neighbor notes, da-da-da-da-da, and so on. Then pretty soon he'll add a little more, like a third up, and then maybe he'll add a fifth, and then the soprano comes in, and boy, she's got the bigger leaps again, right? And so it builds, but it all makes sense with the text. It's not just a pure, this is how we build a climax. He's doing it for the reason, as you see in the text. And keeps adding more and more parts. And I'll point, and it's he moves to scale passages. So he starts out with just seconds, next door neighbors. And then he does them in a scale passage going up, still next door neighbors. And then he starts using minor thirds, which means you've skipped one note, and you get a little bit of a leap. And it's a minor third. If you put two minor thirds together, you get a diminished chord, which gives you the tritone. So there it is again. We found another way to do it. You hear the orchestra getting faster and faster in the subdivisions underneath the beat. Gets more and more exciting, more leaps. Then you start hearing the main themes coming back in the sort of the same order. All right? And when you get down to the Dies Irae theme, then that's the Dies Irae is in the orchestra. And not in the choir. And the choir is singing descending scales on top of that. All right. So it's like judgment is coming, and the call, and mankind and humankind is getting sort of sucked down, going down through it. And then you finally get the full organ used, the only time it happens in the whole piece, this big G minor chord. And the choir is singing Libera Me Libera and the soprano soloist, and you can just barely hear them. You hear them better on the recording than you would in a live performance. And this is one spot where you dare not cut the orchestra back and the organ back in order to hear the choir and get a balance, because it's not supposed to be balanced. You're supposed to be sucked into this. And my image is always the Last Judgment in Sistine Chapel, where you get these people writhing and being sort of sucked down and pulled on by the devils and all that sort of thing. It's that kind of an image. So you're saying, deliver me, and you're being sort of sucked down into battle, and so on, right? And then this is followed by the nightmare scene between the two soldiers. So that the big G minor chord that the organ plays gradually takes off the stops, so it gets softer and softer, all right? The choirs and so disappear. The Libera Me, in a sense, it's like you give up. It's okay, this is my last call to deliver me, right? And then you get the two soldiers. It can be, you can see it as they're both dead and they're confronting each other in death, or you can see one is having a nightmare, which I like to because it relates to what goes on to our soldiers who are still living and sort of reacting to their battle experiences. And I see the living in his nightmare seeing this man that he, of course, you have bayonet warfare. And that's what it is in this poem, that it's not, I didn't shoot the other guy, I came, saw him face to face, and did the bayonet, stuck it in him, and ran it up, or like you're supposed to do, right? And then you get the reaction of the other soldier who was killed. So yeah, all right, so they confront each other, they say, finally, let us sleep now. We've talked about this a lot of times now. They get this pentatonic resolution. Okay, and the soprano comes in, so it's the one place in the whole of reconciliation idea. You get the choirs, the full orchestra, the chamber orchestra, all the soloists, and the children for the first and only time in the whole piece. So you get that as also part of the resolution, reconciliation. And then, as I said, the children, right before the end of the piece, they start singing, you know, grant them rest, except the children are infected with the tritone, right? And then you get the final resolution that you've heard several times before, where it goes down into the F major, and you do get the final rest. But it comes out of that tritone again. So I think we can get that in. Distant battle sounds, like you hear it from far away. Filling in the chromatic scale again, so he's brought that. You hear the quintuplets in the bottom of the orchestra. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3. Still only chromatic steps in the choir. A little step here and there. So it's like you're waiting for the battle to come, that day of terror. Now you're going to go up the scale. Still seconds. Next one. Quintuplets are in the top now of the orchestra. Fire. Take your intervals now.
She has her sending scale again. But unlike the Benedictus, this is full of fear. Big leaps.
Sharp to C, actually, there. And now it passes to the chamber orchestra, same chord. Still the same chord. Here's the tritone in the strings.
Once straight off and stay.
nightmare cord still holding through. Couplets in the bottom now. Tritone. Strange friend. The tritone. Whole tone scale. Tritone. Is still there. Finally changes. Very dry laugh. Thank you.
next line, Brit wrote instead of Wilfred Owen. Back to that G minor chord with the tritone on the top of the strings. Children are in D major, not actually pentatonic. They're starting to sing a melody, but essentially it's pentatonic background.
Everybody is there now. placed on men. It was really hard to, I couldn't find where they, what they were singing.
Oh, in that, oh.
Last part, until the end.
Uh-huh. Well, you can breathe now. Does it feel, does it kind of feel like you've held your breath for about an hour? So tomorrow we'll do a full listening session, and I will pretty much try to keep out of the way, you know, so we're not talking over the music. It seems disrespectful in a way to be talking about it, but I think it helps if you know you're going to get another chance to hear it unadulterated.